on the ground. Not backing down.
Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, March 13th, 2017. Beginning with the snowstorm, New York City's 1.1 million public school children get a snow day tomorrow. The National Weather Service issued a blizzard watch in effect from late tonight through late Tuesday night. A nor'easter is forecast to bring heavy snow, along with strong and potentially damaging winds that will create hazardous travel conditions on Tuesday. New York City's Mayor Bill de Blasio.
We're tracking a major storm with blizzard conditions. Snow will begin after midnight tonight and then will intensify. The worst period of the snow at this moment is projected to be from 6 a.m. tomorrow through noon tomorrow, with intense accumulation. At this moment, we believe it could be at the rate of 2 to even 4 inches per hour.
Coastal flooding is expected. Estimates in the city put the storm accumulation at 8 to 16 inches, and the mayor urges people not to be on the roads tomorrow. In other news, influential federal prosecutor Preet Bharara and another 45 Obama-era U.S. attorneys are out of their jobs. This after the Trump administration asked them to resign on Friday. Bharara had been asked to stay on at his post by Trump a few months ago. Bharara refused to resign, and then he was fired. Outcry over this against the Trump administration was swift. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren said Mr. Trump was trying to stifle aggressive prosecutions by dismissing him. Maryland Representative Elijah Cummings, he's the top Democrat on the House Oversight Committee, he suggested Trump might have fired Bharara to thwart a potential corruption investigation and believed the move added to a lack of trust of the administration. Richard Aborn with the Citizens Crime Commission of New York City said Bharara's dismissal is damaging to the public's trust, which depends on the people's faith that justice is transparently administered without fear or favor. New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman said President Trump's abrupt and unexplained decision to summarily remove over 40 U.S. attorneys has once again caused chaos in the federal government and led to questions about whether the Justice Department's vital and nonpartisan work will continue under Attorney General Sessions. Anthony Romero, who heads up resistance at the ACLU, this weekend said, "We have 300 lawyers. The Justice Department has 11,000 lawyers working for Jeff Sessions."
When you count the number of lawyers working for the whole U.S. government, 19,000 lawyers working for President Trump. And he's clear about his ideological agenda. You heard him fire a bunch of U.S. attorneys in the Justice Department because he didn't like the party they came from. This is a man that will expect to double down on his ideological agenda. And even though we will do everything we can, we are still the David to the government's Goliath. And some of the actions you'll take may not succeed. And some of the elected officials we'll ask you to talk to may not hear you or heed you. But we must never despair. Messy, disruptive, loud, that's what democracy looks like.
The ACLU launched a nationwide people power training over the weekend to make sure people are aware of their rights as protesters, and it urged opponents of the Trump administration and its policies to come out and continue to protest.
If we can put the pressure on elected officials through town halls, through lobbying, through direct actions, for protests in support of the values we believe in, like we believe in Planned Parenthood, let's protest in front of their clinics of support. Let's protest on behalf of undocumented immigrants and hold up signs saying, "Welcome to America, you new citizen." Let's show the signs of support for Muslim centers. So people powers our effort to harness that great energy.
Justice does not compromise. We must protect New Yorkers' rights.
In Albany today, the NYCLU, which is the New York arm of the ACLU, gathered with supporters for an emergency day of action. Under the banner "Justice Does Not Compromise," they demanded state legislative action to safeguard civil liberties under threat from the Trump administration.
We're here this afternoon to talk about the New York State leaders making the police collect and make the data for police killings visible.
Eric Garner's mom, Gwen Carr, spoke about police accountability and transparency in favor of the Police Statistics and Transparency Act. It's called the STAT Act.
My son Eric was killed by NYPD, allegedly selling Lucy's. He was put in an illegal chokehold that caused his death. If not for the video by Ramsey Otto, that was captured, that captured his murder, it would have been another police killing, undocumented, and swept under the rug. This is because New York State, they don't document, or they don't make the police document police killings. This has to stop. We must demand that our elective officials make our police departments collect the data and report the data on these police killings. We don't know how many killings like my son's Eric has happened since July 17, 2014. But we know that there's been many that is not documented. They are treated, the people who are killed are treated just as a number, but they are human beings. And they need to be documented. And we need to know the categories. We need to know if they were unarmed. We need to know if they was mentally disturbed. We need to know if they were people of color. We need to know all this data. Some were little children killed. We don't know. Only time we know if we run into their loved ones and they tell us what happened tragically to their loved ones. So this needs to stop. And although the killings is the most important things that we need the data on, but there is some low interactions with police officers, then there is physical and mental abuse. We need to know that also. Nobody deserves that. If you're stopped for a crime or just stopped sometimes, stopped for walking while being black or being of color, we need to know those statistics. Why were you stopped?
NYCLU's executive director Donna Lieberman says she's in awe of Gwen Carr, and she spoke of other legislative demands.
It's a tribute to you, Gwen, and to the other mothers, sisters, brothers, sons and daughters, and fathers. We will not give up until we ensure that all people are treated with dignity and respect by the police and by our government. That's why we're here today, to demand real transparency and accountability so the police officers no longer believe that they are above the law. And what we demand of the state legislature today is pass the STAT Act. Hold law enforcement accountable by demanding they disclose deaths in police custody, street stops, arrests, and summonses in their communities. Yeah. And while you're at it, raise the age, huh? Yeah. In this dystrumpian era, our state legislature cannot afford to wait to protect our civil liberties any longer. Along with the STAT Act, we demand that they pass the Reproductive Health Act now. Fix the state human rights law and pass GENDA now. Pass the Electronic Communications Privacy Act now. And enact public defense reform statewide now.
Trump wants to overturn Roe v. Wade and leave abortion rights to the states. The Reproductive Health Act would codify the constitutional protections established in Roe v. Wade in New York, with no health exceptions. GENDA, the Gender Identity and Expressions Non-Discrimination Act, protects New Yorkers from discrimination. The New York State electronic communications would require a warrant from a judge before police can snoop through New Yorkers' digital lives, and the Justice Equality Act would ensure that New York State properly funds and oversees public defense services. And Lieberman cautions against a bill from the New York State Senate.
Another thing that's coming down the pike, it's the Betsy DeVos New York version. That's right. We think that Betsy DeVos and Trump are trying to destroy our system of public education. Well, there's a New York version, just came out in the Senate this week. It's called tuition tax credits. It's a tax boondoggle for millionaires, real wealthy people, designed to destroy our public system of education. So we need support for public schools, not for private schools, and certainly not for religious schools. We live in a secular society, not a fundamentalist society. We support free public education, free public schools, not religious schools. So keep your eyes open, and we have to stop the proposal for tuition tax credit.
The people united will never be defeated. The people united.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica radio broadcasting at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. As we reported last week, on March 7th at 7 p.m., radical human rights attorney Lynn Stewart died after a long battle with cancer complicated by recent strokes. The 77-year-old died at home with her husband of 56 years, Ralph Poynter. He was at her side, surrounded by grandchildren and other family and friends. Stewart was celebrated in an hour-long service Saturday morning at the historic St. Mark's Church in the Bowery. The ample sanctuary was overflowing. Hundreds filled the standing room only spaces in the back. We have more on this story by WBAI's Sally O'Brien and Bob Lederer.
Beloved by many and reviled by some, the illustrious life and work of radical attorney, activist, friend, mother, grandmother, and Ralph's lifelong wife, Lynn Stewart, has come to a close. In the end, Stewart succumbed to cancer after successfully fighting the disease for more than a decade. In 2005, after a trial in which prosecutors invoked the specter of 9/11 attacks, Stewart was convicted of providing, quote, material support to terrorists, merely for releasing a statement to the press from her client, Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman, an act prosecutors maintained was passing messages to her client's followers in Egypt. She was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison, but prosecutors appealed the sentence as too lenient. In 2010, a federal appeals court ordered the sentencing judge to review and resentence Stewart. Her new sentence, imposed at age 70, with one bout of breast cancer behind her, was 10 years in federal prison. Family members called it a de facto death sentence. 3 years later, Stewart's cancer returned and spread to several other organs. And in August 2013, after lengthy delays in getting proper care at the federal prison in Texas, the prison doctor estimated her life expectancy to be 18 months. In a letter to the sentencing judge, Stewart quoted Welsh poet Dylan Thomas, writing, "I do not intend to go gentle into that good night. There's much to be done in this world. I do know that I do not want to die here in prison, a strange and loveless place. I want to be where all is familiar. In a word, home." Stewart was granted compassionate release on New Year's Eve 2013. That night, Bob Lederer called her husband, Ralph Poynter, in Fort Worth, Texas, to get an update and received a tremendous surprise.
Hi.
Is that Lynn? This is Bob Lederer.
Well, hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm great. Lynn, we're so thrilled about your release. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling halfway good. I'm a little tired out. I'm going to try to put my feet up and get ready to come back, be ready to go get him again. We finally won, my man. We won this. After all these years, I wouldn't be sitting in this hotel room with Ralph if it hadn't been for all the people who put the effort in and who directed their very strong spiritual selves towards making it happen. And that's what kept me going in jail, because jail is not a nice place. And I promised all the women I left behind me that I would never forget them and that I will go on fighting for them for the rest of my life. to change the conditions of that jail and get people going, and my second, of course, my political prisoners, to get the political prisoners home. All both of those things would be my focus probably for the rest of my life.
Lynn Stewart kept true to her promise of not going gentle into that good night. She defied death itself, living another 3 years. During Saturday's service, her daughter, Dr. Zenobia Brown, spoke for the family, affirming not only her mother's determination, but also her courage and love for family and life.
Yesterday at the wake, I spoke about the great love and courage of my mom, and that that courage came from her tremendous love. And what she was willing to give up and sacrifice for the things that she believed in. And that she, in her fearlessness, lived a tremendously full life. And a life that was not lived in fear, right? She was fearless. And we all want to be that. But when it became clear that she was going on to that next journey, that her journey on this planet was coming to a close, I was afraid, because how can we even begin to think about filling that void that was Lynn Stewart?
Zenobia described being afraid when she realized her mother was no longer there. In addition to prayer, Zenobia says, she found strength in the tangible results of her mother's life.
I looked at this life that she built, and I looked at my father, and in those last days in the hospital where he was kissing her and she was kissing him and talking about their love, and I knew that fearless love existed and it would not end here. When I look at our family, I see all of that, and then I see all of you today and all of her comrades last night, and I just see tremendous love, and it makes me not afraid. And it makes me believe, and I believe that we will not go quietly, that we will push ourselves to make mom proud, whether it's letters to prisoners, whether it's financial support, whether it's not forgetting the birthday, not forgetting the Christmas, whether it's just whoever we see in the world, opening our hearts to that person, regardless of race, religion, creed, whatever it is, because that's what she would have done, whether it's not saying, not letting the awful thing go unpunished, not leaving the defenseless defenseless. I know we will do those things.
Not leaving the defenseless without a robust legal defense was the hallmark of Lynn Stewart's career. After working as a school librarian and teacher, she became embroiled in the struggle for Black community control of schools in the early 60s. Seeing the persecution of activists by police and courts inspired her to go to law school. For the next 3 decades, she represented hundreds of criminal defendants, often at no charge. Former Black Panther and incarcerated journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal recorded a tribute to her last week.
For decades, her and husband Ralph fought for New York's political activists and revolutionaries, like Black Panthers and Young Lords, a Puerto Rican socialist collective. But mostly, they fought for the freedom of the poor and dispossessed of New York, Black and brown ghettos. They fought often and fought well. The late activist lawyer William Kunstler once said that defense lawyers should be officers of their clients instead of officers of the court. Lynn Stewart was an officer of her clients, a people's lawyer, beloved and respected from imprisoned nation. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Throughout the 1980s, Lynn Stewart represented several revolutionaries facing major felony charges. She was the attorney for former Weather Underground member David Gilbert, charged in the 1981 aborted robbery of a Brinks truck by the Black Liberation Army and white anti-imperialists. Gilbert and his co-defendants, Kwesi Balogun and Judy Clark, faced felony murder charges in the shooting deaths of 2 guards and a police officer. Gilbert was never accused of firing a shot. The defendants waged a political defense, indicting the system of white supremacy. They were convicted and sentenced to 75 years to life. In a federal case arising out of the same incident, Stewart, along with co-counsel Chokwe Lumumba, won an acquittal of their client, Black liberation fighter and musician Bilal Suni Ali, who had been charged with conspiracy. In 1986, Lynn Stewart teamed with William Cutsler to defend a young black man in the Bronx charged with the attempted murder of six police officers. The controversial high-profile case received constant front-page coverage and gained her a media profile. Larry Davis, who later changed his name to Adam Abdul Hakim, claimed self-defense when a team of officers raided his sister's apartment, claiming they simply wanted to question him about the killing of suspected drug dealers, for which he was also charged. Stewart and Kunstler argued that the charges were a frame-up to excuse the police raid, and that the case exposed rampant police corruption. The jury accepted Davis's self-defense argument and acquitted him of both charges, but found him guilty of illegal possession of weapons. This was apparently the first time a defendant was acquitted in a shootout with police based on self-defense. Abdul Hakim was later tried and convicted on another murder charge and was killed in prison in 2008. In the final years of her legal career, before her disbarment as part of her 2005 sentence, Stewart defended several Muslims facing charges based on secret evidence. She won significant victories. During a victory celebration in 2014, Lynn Stewart referred to this work with activist attorneys Ramsey Clark and Abdeen Jabara.
There was a short period of time when they arrested many Muslims on secret evidence. And we, working together with Ramsey and Abdeen Jabara, we broke that and forced them and forced Nasser's freedom.
But it was her role as one of the attorneys for Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman which brought her the greatest notoriety and ultimately led to her own imprisonment. The blind Sheikh was the exiled leader of a militant Islamist organization in Egypt. In a media climate of anti-terrorist fervor, he and nine co-defendants were convicted of a seditious conspiracy, conspiracy to murder Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak, and plotting to blow up several New York landmarks. Stewart and the other attorneys argued that the charges against Rahman were trumped up with the help of an FBI informant who acted as a provocateur, and that the Sheikh had been exercising his free speech rights to urge the overthrow of an oppressive regime in his native Egypt. As Stewart stated, quote, "He's not the first person to go to prison for his beliefs, and he won't be the last. He was sentenced to life in prison, and he died last month."
As reported earlier, it was this case that led to Lynn Stewart's imprisonment, charged and convicted of conspiracy and providing material aid to a terrorist, her client. In an amazing interview from his prison cell, journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal spoke with Lynn about her conviction.
In reading about your case, I saw references to your alleged violation of SAMs. I'm sure most people have no idea what a SAM is. Could you explain?
After Sheikh Omar was convicted, he was sent to middle of America, and that wasn't good enough for the government, so they imposed on him these very harsh prison regulations. He was only allowed one phone call a month to his family and one a week to his lawyers, and that was it. He was not allowed to communicate with the media at all. And there were various other things as well. No outside visitors who were not family, not even for religious reasons. So these very, very restrictive regulations were put in place. And then the lawyers, all of us, were asked to sign on that we were aware that he was under those and that we would abide by them. But it was our thinking, well, of course, these prison regulations cannot interfere with the legal work. And so as a result, we did what we thought we had to do for the client, that is, keeping him advised of those events and things that would influence his case and be important for him to know and understand. So they put these very harsh regulations. One of them included the media. And of course, what I did was I made a press release, just as we had been doing for the last 4 years. And it was only after September 11th that this act, which had been done in 2000, suddenly became actionable in the government's eyes.
After her first sentencing to 28 months, Lynn was ordered to surrender to U.S. Marshals on November 19th, 2009. Before her surrender, we sat down to an interview. The following is an excerpt.
Today is the day that Joe Hill was executed, as was a personal hero, Wolfe Tone, one of the early Irish strugglers for freedom when they thought Napoleon would come in and help them out. So, you know, not so inappropriate that I'm going to jail today. I'm in very good company with the oppressed leadership over the centuries. And Joe Hill, of course, was a Swede like me. And Wolfe Tone, of course, was an Irishman like me. So it's very appropriate. But at any rate, I am prepared this afternoon at 5 o'clock, escorted by my comrades, by my friends, by my loved ones, to walk into the marshal's office and say, here I be, here I am, and go in and start dealing with this right now.
And as she got ready to turn herself in that day, Stewart addressed the massive crowd on hand to escort her to the federal courthouse, thanking them for their support.
This gives me the heart to be able to continue. You know, to see you all out here, everyone, the grannies, everybody out here to support me makes me able to follow through and do this and continue on with this struggle from wherever I may be.
For 9 months in 2013, Stewart's husband, Ralph Poynter, led a relentless international campaign to win compassionate release for Lynn Stewart. There were many protests, vigils, and statements of support from attorneys and activist organizations. An online petition received 85,000 signatures, and the support of such prominent voices as Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Noam Chomsky, and Dick Gregory, who initiated a hunger fast in solidarity. Even the prison warden indicated her support, but it took several more months before Stewart's application was approved by the Bureau of Prisons and then quickly signed by Judge Codal.
On January 1, 2014, the then 74-year-old grandmother arrived at LaGuardia Airport to a wildly enthusiastic greeting by over 100 supporters. Stewart, weakened by cancer and 4 years of imprisonment, was no less than her spirited self as she abandoned her wheelchair and, accompanied by her husband Ralph, walked towards the cheering crowd.
The grandchildren and the family is just crowded around Lynn Stewart. She's hugging people. She's kissing grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
I mean, yesterday at this time, I was deep in the dungeons, and here I am in my beloved New York. It's just wonderful.
This is a great victory for the people, a beaming Ralph declared. He was fighting down to the last moment, said Stewart of her husband. But me, she continued, I was very discouraged.
I tell you, the alternative of not getting her out was totally unacceptable. And this is why we all struggled so hard. And each time we got a no, we, as a group, redoubled and redoubled our efforts. And we the people, got her out.
Now I'm home. I'm still pretty much with it, I hope. And here I am with these wonderful children and grandchildren, and I look forward to beating the odds.
Defiant to the end, Lynn lived 3 years and 3 months more, actively organizing and speaking out for the freedom of political prisoners. She died in her home, surrounded by her beloved Ralph, grandchildren, family, and close friends. During the March 11th service, Reverend Winnie Varghese delivered a memorable homily and called for those assembled to call out the names of those now deceased, lined up, she said, to greet Lynn.
John Brown.
Lynn Stewart has joined the great prophets of our history and her own family and ancestors that made her who she is. What she got right in her life that we all pray that we might get right in ours is to see the world as it should be and not as it is, and to imagine that we can be a part of making it as it should be. In this moment, in this time, we need a couple of hundred or thousand or maybe even million people to carry this forward. We need it. It's not getting better anytime soon. And Lynn Stewart would say, get to it. You know what your role is in the years to come. You know it. Get serious about it. This is not just a time to lament. It is a time to change the world we live in.
A public memorial for Lynn Stewart will be held on Sunday, April 22nd, at St. Peter's Church in Manhattan. We'll post further details when they become available. Thanks to John Riley for production assistance. With Bob Lederer, I'm Sally O'Brien, WBAI News, New York.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Monday, March 13th, 2017. The news was produced with Sally O'Brien, Bob Lederer, and Reggie Johnson. Up, Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a hard that misery scrolled. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Most people think great God will come from the sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you will look for yours on your earth. And now when you see the light, you stand up for your rights. Yeah.
Get up, stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Don't give up the fight.
Life is your right.
Get up, stand up.
We can't give up the fight.
Stand up for your right.
Sick and tired of your ism, schism, game, dine and go to heaven in the Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can't.